Boom! What's up, Amelia? Dayspring here with a very fun and special episode of Power of X-Men because we had our guest on last week and y'all just kept sending me notes and DMs and emails saying that how much you love Stefania, how much you loved the conversation we both had with Lenore, and that you wanted to know more about her. And I was just like, hey, you want to come back in? And she said, yes! And here she is once more. Stefania, I feel that like everyone knows you and they know your cosplay, but above your cosplay, they just love your infectious energy and enthusiasm.
It's honestly something I did not expect. Starting this up, what is it, 3 years ago now? I did not expect to come this far. So it was something that I thought I'd just start for fun after college, right? Even like before I graduated college. And then it just picked up to where we are now. So it's crazy. It's crazy that people, I mean, I love Rogue. So like people will know me as Rogue with all the cosmic content I do and X-Men stuff. But it's just crazy where I am right now.
I want to dive in to how crazy it has been for you, especially these last 3 years. Because I think you have such an interesting story and it parallels a lot of some of your other contemporaries out there, like Nate K. Weir, who talked about starting a vibe during lockdown. However, before we dive into that Oprah stuff and we get into the series stuff, I want to talk to you about X-Men 97 and the premiere. And that's where we officially met IRL. We, of course, did the episode with Lenore weeks in advance, but I want to know your thought process on getting on a plane, because we're both in the New York area, to go to Los Angeles and arrive looking boss in your Hellfire Gala Rogue.
So I got my friend's invite. So she invited me to the premiere as her plus one 2 weeks in advance. And I know they come out 2 weeks in advance, but like I got that and I was like, so shocked because I knew the premiere was happening because I read and heard people had gotten invites out and I'm like, oh, I'm in the East Coast. Like I wouldn't get an invite. And then she hit me up and said, hey, do you want to be a plus one? And I said, absolutely. I want to be a plus one.
You're like, I'm dropping everything I'm doing right now.
Honestly, I really did. I mean, it's great that I work contracts. I have my own schedule. So yeah, I can do whatever I want.
I'm gig-based. I can pick up and go whenever I need to.
Exactly. And I totally did not expect it. I swear I manifest that. Like I have, let me tell you something. My friend told me to make a vision board, right, for this year. I did. And I made it on, I used Pinterest pictures, made it on Procreate on my iPad. And then I used it as my lock screen. Here, a little quick little glance here. You saw Rogue in the middle. So I swear to you, like some of that stuff already came true, like the X-Men 97 premiere. I was so shocked.
I believe in manifesting. I'm sorry to interrupt you because I feel very strongly about that. I've historically been an atheist in my life, but over the last few years, there was this seismic shift after the pandemic, and I've opened up my heart a little bit more to the universe and what it's telling me and how to manifest. So hearing your story, I'm not shocked at all. And especially, by the way, I don't want it to make it sound like, oh, you put something on a, you know, a lock screen and it happened. You work really hard on your content.
Thank you.
So of course it's going to come, but I think the through line being when you work hard, good things happen, especially if you're trying to manifest them and you're putting that out there.
Yes. It's something that my friend got me into and I was like, honestly, I was like on a whole TikTok thing for you page for a long time with it. I was like, all right, now I gotta try it. So that's that. But yeah, I was so excited to just hop on a plane and go to LA and go to the premiere. And I knew that so many people that I knew were going, like you, and I got to meet you all in person for the first time.
Oh my God, I gasped. So me and Super X Luigi, I went with Super X Luigi because like you, I'm on the East Coast. I'm like, I'm not getting invited. And I had spoken to a couple of people, but you know how that goes. But Super X Luigi was like, I got your plus one invite right here, girl. And so we were at a bar pre-gaming and I saw you walk in and I'm sorry that I probably fanboyed out when I saw you, but it's one of those things, and I'm sure you get this quite a bit, that I feel, well, I mean, I do know you because we did an episode together, but I have been following you along for some time now. And I don't see person who was a guest on my podcast. I see, surprise, surprise, I see Stefania. I see your cosplay. And to see, it's like seeing us, you know, like that celebrity. And oh my God, but your BDE, your energy, your rogue energy in person, it's so beautiful.
Thank you. I really, really appreciate that. I know that reminds me, when I was at New York Comic Con last year, somebody came up to me and they asked, are you Stefania? I'm like, yeah. And he was like, oh my God, I absolutely love, love, love your videos. Can I please draw a picture of you? And he like drew a portfolio of me, like a side profile of me right then and there. And it came out so good. This was on a Sunday. I was like casual rogue with my clip-on white bangs. I don't need those anymore. But
oh, I have followed your hair journey. I have been invested in your hair journey. You did it, what, the night before the girl? Those, the cojones it takes to do your hair, color your hair the night before a premiere. WTF. Yeah. My yeah. God. That is not only rogue energy. That's Lenore Zan energy, too.
I was like, I have to do something spontaneous for this premiere. You know, I'm going to LA. I got to make myself known, you know, so I got to do something crazy. And that's what I did. I was like, I got it done professionally the first time, way too expensive. And I kind of didn't like how it came out, but I just loved it at the time. But this time around, I was like, okay, I'm going to do it myself. Going to learn how to do it. And then I'm just going to do the front part of my hair, so it's not like half my head. And I was like, yeah, let's do it. And I did it. And I was up the whole night. I did not go to sleep before I went to LA. So like I slept on the plane. I was up for 24 hours, basically. Yeah.
First of all, like kudos. I can't sleep on a plane as much as I try. I may be able to doze off here and there, but I have such a hard time falling asleep. We were trying to coordinate our calendars to see if we can get the same flight. You, if I'm remembering correct, did you come in the day before the premiere or did you come morning of?
Day before. So I arrived in the afternoon.
You gave yourself a buffer. I got you.
Yeah. Yeah. So I arrived at like 2 o'clock at the airport.
So you're getting ready with your friend. I love the videos that you were posting. You get to the Roosevelt, you see a drunk podcaster. but then where did you guys walk me through the rest of your night from there?
So we went to the Roosevelt to meet up with friends. I saw you at the bar, so I had to say hi. Definitely have to pregame for another event sometime in the future, 100%.
Oh my God, I would love to.
And after that, we walked right to the theater because it was like 3 minutes away, very close. And waited in line, we got in. It was so crowded inside. I was like kind of overwhelmed.
Oh,
and
same.
Then, yeah. And then we tried to get our picture in front of the sign on the inside.
The step and repeat.
Yeah. And we did that, but we didn't really like how it came out the first time because it's kind of like fast paced. So we went again after the premiere and went inside, and it was just, I've never been to the El Capitan, never seen pictures of it. And I walked inside and it was amazing. The music that was playing, the lights, the colors around the room, it was beautiful. And then there was a balcony. I was like, oh my God, this is like an actual theater. Like, I see this on Broadway. I don't see this in a movie theater. And then the curtains that would open up for before the screen, like when the show started, I was like, wow, I could sit here and just watch those curtains all day open up with those animations. It was beautiful. It was like 5 curtains and I loved it.
It was so gorgeous. And for the familia at home that may have been following along with our stories, the step and repeat was so crazy. And I can understand why you were probably not too happy with that first photo, because we did it too. And there's sort of a handler there that's telling you, hurry up, come on. And the show's starting. They're ushering you in so quickly. You don't really have the time to acclimate yourself. And when, you know, you are building a community and you're trying to snag content, you need that 1 second to sort of adjust to the area. But familia, it was elbow to elbow. There was so much energy. You go into the main theater and everyone is going nuts.
Yeah. I saw so many people.
I know. Was this your first time meeting a lot of people IRL?
Yes, actually. Crazy. I know.
Well, because
I was just like so overwhelmed, and I was so excited to see people.
And because you started off during lockdown, so you haven't had that opportunity. You had New York Comic Con, yes, but we're very different on the East Coast. We're not the West Coast vibe. Everyone's on the West Coast. I always feels like no man's island here. Especially when I'm down in Florida, I'm like, there's no one here. Mm-hmm. But that must have been so like, what? Was there anyone in particular that you were just dying to meet that's part of like the ex family?
I mean, I was just dying to see Lenore again. I just love her so much. I just love her energy. And I was like, I definitely have to like run into Lenore and chat with her before I go back home, because this is the one night I can do that while I'm here. But I was really excited to see her again. And also me, I met AJ as well. I love AJ. I met Chris Potter. I met Ross Marquand.
Mm-hmm.
I love him. I did not know that he voiced Xavier at all. And I saw his name in the credits and I was like, I have to meet him because he was at the bar at the after party. I was like, let me one drink in. Let me go up to him and say hi. I was like, embarrassed. You know,
you did not need to be embarrassed at all. You had familia. You had such a wonderful presence at the premiere, and I could see you gliding. And I think I saw you when you took a photo with Chris Potter. Was it when he was sitting on the sofas?
Yes.
Yeah, because I was behind him with Lenore, and I was just like, oh my God, look at that right there, that energy. You just have such a wonderful, I don't want to say stage presence because you're not on stage, but you have such a wonderful presence in a room.
Well, I did do theater, so that's where that stage presence comes from.
But
I wasn't always there, but
no, it's something you sort of nourish and you grow. I'm a full-time auctioneer, and it sort of takes a minute. It takes a beat for you to develop some kind of presence when you're talking to an audience. But for you, if I was you at that age, I would be far ahead of where I'm at today in my life, because something in you is just very prodigious and it gleams.
Yeah, I honestly, the reason why I love theater so much is because I just love the presence. I love the attention.
Of course, that's why everyone does it. Same with auctioneers. Auctioneers love being at the center of attention.
Yeah, I mean, even if I didn't have a starring role, which I never had a starring role, I've had a supporting role. That was like the most, that's the most I've gotten. But even if I'm like in the background, I'm like, I'm going to try and stand out as much as I can because I'm on the stage and I need to make my presence known. But it's not like kind of like a selfish kind of way. I love the spotlight. I love performing.
Yeah. And that's something we talked about when you were on the pod with Lenore. And I believe, I'm trying to remember how you kind of came into being a thespian, but when you ended that story, you said, I don't want to do anything else. And it was the same with Lenore. She was here like, I just don't want to do anything but this. And I think when I look back on that episode, when I see you in person, if there's something that's very evident, is that you have a big soul. You're very commanding. And when you have a big soul, unfortunately, you have this responsibility that you do have to share that light with other people.
Yeah. So I wasn't always the person that would get in front of people and perform. I was very shy and I would always try and keep that behind closed doors. So like every time I was home alone, I would just burst out into song because I didn't want to sing in front of people. I was just too embarrassed. And even though like it wasn't like the best singing when I was first starting, right? But now that I've performed in theater, I've done choir, I have kind of grown in my vocal range and the way I sing. So, but even still now I'm like kind of shy to sing in front of people. I did for the first time karaoke at a bar last summer, first time. And it wasn't perfect. So I was nervous as hell.
Okay. But
I sang in Queen.
Yeah. Oh my God. Yes.
I sang Queen. Cause I love Queen. And That was a moment where I was like, okay, first one's done. Maybe the second time I'll be more calm. Maybe a few more drinks and I'll be even better. But theater, I started fourth grade. We did Gone with the Wind, and really weird show to do in the fourth grade. Oh, and I played Scarlett O'Hara, the sweet Southern Belle herself. And then I stopped doing theater. So I did dance all throughout, like growing up when I was a kid. So when I was about like 4 or 5 years old until maybe I was 13. But then I continued doing dance. I actually started a dance team in my high school, my friends and I, and we would just continue dancing together. We were a trio. That was our thing. And then I didn't get back onto the stage until high school, senior year of high school. I did Bye Bye Birdie. That was a musical, and that was a really fun show. I played a teen girl and first reporter, and I had one line, and I was crazy as a teen girl because she was like a fangirl of this kind of like Elvis-like person. And then I decided, well, this is lots of fun. I'm going to continue this in college, and I went into college. Very different atmosphere in theater, and I was very shy, very nervous, and we did a chorus line for my freshman year, and I auditioned for that. I totally did not sound great at all. Maybe my monologue got me into the show, but my singing was like, it could have been better. I don't think I'm gonna get casted, but I got casted. I got casted as a cut dancer. So this was dancers that were cut in the beginning of the show because these are people that are auditioning to be on a chorus line. It's very meta. And then the second semester of my freshman year, I did a cabaret, a theater cabaret, and that's where I kind of blossomed and became more confident in my performance, which led me to earning a supporting role in the cabaret musical the next year, my sophomore year in the fall. And I played Fräulein Kost, and that one really like pushed me out there. I actually got nominated for an acting award. So at the Kennedy Center American College Theater Festival, you go and compete for this acting award or a musical theater one too, the singing one too. And I competed for it. It's very hard. So I did not make it past the first round, but a lot of people don't make it. And I actually got nominated twice for that. So I think the next year I got nominated again. But yeah. And I just did theater all throughout college. And I think my best performance had to have been A Winter's Tale by William Shakespeare. That was my
Oh,
senior year.
I love A
And
Winter's Tale so
yeah,
much.
so beautiful. And I played Paulina, and we did it during COVID. So we had to wear masks on stage. There was like no set on the stage. It was kind of just black stage floor and black curtains in the back. And that was it. We really couldn't do much. And we all wore black. And that, I really wish we didn't have to wear masks, or it wasn't during COVID, because then you could really see how much I've improved in my performance. I had to really like belt because of the masks, and it was very hot under those lights because they were black masks we were wearing. So like wearing black masks, it was very hot. But yeah, that's how it was.
I was going to ask you this question because when the pandemic happened, it was this shift for so many of us. And I work as a full-time auctioneer for galas, and I always thought, well, my gig is recession-proof, right? Because even if the world and the economy goes to hell, people are still going to want to go to a gala, to an open bar, and to support a charity and a cause. But then once the pandemic happened, everything sort of went out the door, and I did not have that next gig. And I'm curious for you how you had to pivot or something like that, because you are graduating college, you're ready to start your career, and now all of a sudden, whoops, there's a global pandemic, and now you have to go on stage and you have to wear a mask. And it's really difficult to be able to perform like that. I'm curious, what was your approach to your craft? How were you able to still persevere? I mean, I'll tell you, I had a meltdown. I had a meltdown, and
Same.
I couldn't do virtual. I hated virtual gigs because how I'm supposed to call out bids to a chat, and I'll just be like, great, paddle number 85 coming in at 100K. And then I'll just be like this, and they'll be like loading, and then I get something else. And it really, you don't have that same energy that you're feeding off with an audience. And for you as an actor, especially doing a play and being on stage in the theater, doing something like William Shakespeare, you need to ha know how the audience, you're feeding off of that energy. So I'm curious, how did you pivot?
So my theater director always said that the last part of a performance, a production, is the audience. That is, the audience completes the show. because like you said, you're feeding off of their energy. When you have a great audience that night, the energy is going to be so great on the stage and you're going to feed off of that and you're going to have such a great performance. There have been times where like the audience wasn't that great and you could tell in the performance that it just didn't resonate, you know, and we kind of just had like a sucky night. But happy usually it's, yeah, usually it's Thursday or Friday. I think Fridays have always been our best shows at the theater, which is, I mean, it makes sense, Friday night, but it's crazy how it's just one day out of all of them. And before COVID happened, I actually went to the Kennedy Center Festival and we got invited to perform our show, The Wolves. This was junior year of college. And we performed The Wolves at this festival. And that was the one where I was like, you know, this is exactly what I want to do for the rest of my life. So going from 300 people in the theater, in our theater at the school, to 600 people performing in front of all theater people, it was honestly like one of the most greatest experiences of my life because you could feel the audience's reactions and hear them and how they're feeling about this performance. Like, it felt so amazing. And during our standing ovations, the cheers, we really like milked in all the cheers happening. And it was so amazing that I started to cry. I was tearing up.
I'm kind of tearing up even hearing that.
It was the final blow for me to say, okay, this is exactly what I'm doing for the rest of my life. I can't do anything else because this is what makes me happy. Being able to perform like that and give a reaction like that from audiences is something that I love the most. I want my performances to impact people. I want them to cry. I want them to laugh. I want them to be happy, scared, sad when they see me perform on the stage, whatever I do. That's the best feeling an actor can have, just having that response. And then hearing the feedback, and it's, you know, sometimes negative, but I haven't really like heard any negative things, luckily, not yet, knock on wood. But majority of it is just positive and just, you just take it all in. It's amazing. So after that, actually towards the end of our festival trip, we started to hear things about COVID happening. We saw on social media stuff coming up, and then we probably had a week back at school before everything was shut down. And we had our spring break that was supposed to be a week, but they turned it into 2 weeks and they said, okay, everyone's staying home. So I actually had to, then I'm going into senior year and I am president of my theater club. I was VP before. I was on the board for 3 years, which is amazing. And I wanted to direct our theater club's cabaret. So I wanted to do it previously, but then COVID happened, so I couldn't do it. So I got on to next year to do it. But this time I had to do it virtually. So I was like, okay, how am I going to do this? Because this is going to be pretty difficult. So I decided to have virtual auditions. People would send in their tapes. And then I kind of, the way I did it was I had everyone record their own parts for each song. And I would kind of edit them into like this, not film, but like just a video. And it would just be a montage of people singing like each song, and it kind of worked. And my most proudest thing about that was the opening title that I did, because I did that on After Effects and I YouTubed it for like 5 hours and learned how to do it. And I was like, this is beautiful. I love it. It's like sparkly and all. But yeah. And then, oh, that was junior year, I think, actually. That might've been junior year. And then senior year is when I did A Winter's Tale, and that's when we had to perform. So we were able to have an audience, but not that much. It was like everybody sat every other seat and they kind of like skipped a row, but it was like every other seat kind of each row. Yeah. And we just, the way I performed was, I was like, okay, I'm going to, since you can't see my face really, you can see half my face, you can hear my voice. So I'm going to try my best to put my performance in my voice. I mean, as you always should, but like, more so than I would normally without a mask, right? So I put a lot of emphasis in my voice and my body movement, because that's all you can see.
Yeah.
And it worked out I think that's probably one of my best performances, and it's unfortunate that you couldn't see the whole thing. It's unfortunate we didn't have like a set either that we could feed off of, or how we had to like distance ourselves, but we made do with what we had, and now I'm here, so
But that's a trial by fire, right?
yeah.
That is almost like the worst case scenario is to enter the thespian realm, like officially, and be doing plays during a global pandemic and shutdown and having to do social distancing. Because that's, I mean, there's always something worse that can happen. But within our lifetime, that is probably, that is event,
Yeah.
changing scenarios that really define us. And I think it's just going to help you more, 20, 30 years from now when you're continuing doing plays or you move on to shows or movies, whatever your career trajectory takes you, you're going to look back on that and you're like, well, I am who I am today because at the starting line, I had every disadvantage against me and I still came out like running like
Exactly,
that.
yeah. Yeah, I actually had to go to the south of France before COVID happened to the Cannes Film Festival. I'm pretty salty about it. I was supposed to intern at the Cannes Film Festival because I was a film major, and this is my junior year. And I tried, this is my third time trying to go actually, because I think I tried to go freshman year, my second semester, and then maybe no, sorry, it was my second time trying to go. So I tried my sophomore year to go. Didn't work out because the paperwork, we didn't get the paperwork to apply for it. So I was like, okay, that's fine. Next year I'll try. Next year I was all set to go. I had my passport, I renewed it, I put down the payment for the trip, and then COVID happened. And the festival is in May, and COVID started in March. So you can see how I feel about that now. And I will forever be salty about that till I actually go to the Cannes Film Festival. So hear me out. I'm invited the next, not next time maybe, but like I will be invited in the future to the Cannes Film Festival. Thank you.
Yes. Oh my God, your rogue energy with that. Yes, you have to get to Cannes like immediately. But to even piggyback off of what you said, remember with the pandemic though, everyone thought, oh, it's only going to be 2 weeks, 2 weeks of
Yeah.
shutdown, because I had a full auction season ahead of me and it was supposed to be my best season yet. And this was in 2020. And I remember I was doing an auction in Ohio and my contact came up to me and was like, oh, you did really good, all things considered. And I was like, excuse me. Like, excuse me, I just raised a lot of money. What do you mean, all things considered? She goes, well, with everything like COVID-19. And I went like this to her, and I never do something like that. And I was like, I am so sick and tired of hearing of COVID-19. And then I was supposed to be in Boston the next day, and I was driving. And my agent calls me, and he's here, like, hey, I know you have this gig in Boston, but it's canceled because of coronavirus. And I was just like, okay, but I have to make rent this month, blah, blah, blah. You know what I mean? Like, in when you live gig to gig, when you're doing play to place, that if you don't show up to that next gig, it's not like you're going to get unemployment. It's not like you're going to get PTO. You just straight up do not get paid, or you don't get the opportunity, which is, what was so important. And I remember being like upset, like, okay, I'm just missing one gig this month. That's okay. And then 2 weeks turned into 3 weeks. Couple months. So I would imagine, I'm thinking of you in March 2020, where you're like, okay, this is happening, but it's only supposed to be 2 weeks, maybe a month. May is still very much on the table. And by the time we got to April, we were like, nope, nothing's coming back. Everything is done.
I was like, this is my second time trying to go, and let me tell you, I tried a third time to go and that didn't work either. Okay, my senior year spring, third time to go, they were going to take a small group this year. I was like, okay, this is my time to go, because the money just transferred over from last year. Okay, perfect.
Yeah, that's
Paperwork
great.
is done. Didn't go.
No,
Couldn't go. They canceled the trip.
why did they cancel?
Because the school said, because COVID's still a thing, they didn't want us to travel. There was no study abroad that semester either, so that we couldn't go abroad. Ugh.
But let me tell you something though, because again, going back to the analogy of being at the starting line, having all these opportunities and sort of being, you know, having, you know, one of your limbs tied behind your back, you were still able to go out running. And I think one of the best things that sort of happened with you with this lockdown was that you discovered an online community of people who really enjoy your content. And when we were talking with Lenore, you had mentioned that it was a very dark time for you. It was a very tough time for you. And now I understand the full context as to why, but that you also started looking online to see what videos are trending and how you can apply that. And that to me just speaks to volumes of the amount of talent that you have, but also your perseverance.
Yeah, so I really didn't think about doing content creating until probably, it was a few months before graduation. So I graduated in May of 2021. And I had this kind of like mental breakdown because, you know, going to the Cannes Film Festival with an internship, that was supposed to set me for my future career. Because with an internship, it's easier to get a job. You know, they know you have background and stuff. You can also make connections. And that kind of like put me over the edge. I wasn't confident in my future. I was scared of the future. I didn't know what was going to happen after I graduated. So I kind of had this mental breakdown. And I just remember like being in my room, not going to go into detail, but I was just being in my room and I was thinking of like the most craziest things. And I was like, I need something to happen. Like I need a sign, like somebody just please help me out. Cause I don't know what's happening. I don't know what I'm doing tomorrow, what I'm doing the next day. I don't even know what I'm going to do. Like after I go to sleep, like what's going to happen in my dreams, you know? And I actually have a journal and I wrote a lot in it. So I used to write a lot and I still do a bit just to get my thoughts on paper. So actually this was during the time where I was going to physical therapy because I was in a car accident and I had been going for like, no, it's okay. It was minor, but like I had a minor concussion, but I still had to go to physical therapy.
It's still a concussion, right? Girl. Concussion. You're like rogue. You're like, it's fine. Don't worry.
I'm invulnerable, you know? And I had to go because I had like real bad pain in the back of my neck and shoulders. So I had to go. And I had been going for like 2 or 3 weeks already. And I had to go the next day. And as I was waiting, I went inside. I went to like the table where you go for your PT. And it's like this open area. They just have curtains to block everyone off. And there's like a gym area too. And as I was waiting on the table, I was looking around and I had sat in this one part of the PT where I never had before. Every time I came to the same spot, this time I was like all the way in the back. I was like, okay, it was a bit busy that day. And I was looking around and I was like, oh, that's interesting. You know what I see over in the other room I've never seen before is a bike, those exercise bikes. And it says Rogue on the bottom. I was looking at the bike, just staring at it. And then something caught my eye on the bottom. It said Rogue. I was like, that's weird. That's really weird. And then I noticed around the room, there was like other equipment that said Rogue on it. And then I didn't know what that meant. And I was like, I researched it later. I was like, oh, okay. Those are exercise equipment. Like that's the brand Rogue. But it was just so weird that
it's
I saw.
It's such a powerful word.
Right. And I had never seen it. Every time I went to the PT, I have never seen this equipment. Like they must have just moved those bikes in that area that day because I had not seen them there before. So that was kind of like my epiphany. I literally was like wide-eyed. And I went home and I started to do some research on social media stuff and I had my cosplay. So I was like, let me try something out. Let me do something here. See where it gets me. Because I had dressed up as Rogue for Halloween in 2020 in October. And actually I went to work dressed as Rogue, but I had the wrong wig because I couldn't get the actual wig in time. I had the evolution wig
Gothrog. We love Gothrog.
We love Gothrog. It's like the Mondo figure with the evolution head instead of the knife.
Have you gotten the Mondo figure in yet? Is she shipping?
I don't. I haven't gotten her. Yeah. I haven't gotten any of the Mondo, but like I do want to in the future. But I was her for Halloween only at work. And then after work, I was like low-key at like my friend's little party. And I was like, okay, let me try something here. And I did. And it kind of paid off. But I don't remember when my first viral video went viral because it had like over a million views and everybody was seeing it. But what was weird was my friend and I went on a hike. I think it was in the summer, definitely the summertime. And we went on a hike. And after a hike, we stood by our cars. We were just chatting for like an hour about stuff. We talked about manifesting and we talked about all these things and what I wanted to accomplish and all that. And I was talking about like how to get a video viral. It's like, I don't know. I post these things and it's like crazy how some random stuff gets viral. I just keep posting though. And then the next day I post that video and it goes viral. That's another like manifesting moment that I was not expecting. So that's crazy how that happened. But yeah, I mean, a few dark moments led to where I am today. So I guess I could really say that Rogue kind of saved me in those dark times. And I appreciate her and I love her and I have become her.
I mean, you are manifesting Rogue. I mean, I am telling you, I'm looking at you and it's so, I feel like what we see in X-Men 92, 97, you've just stepped out of the television and she's you in that embodiment. But, you know, I love the idea that you saw Rogue, the word on this exercise equipment, but sidebar, my gym, I also saw the word Rogue on the equipment too. And they had the weights, but they do them in different colors now. So coincidentally, next to Rogue was green and yellow at my gym.
Oh my God.
And I was like, oh, I wonder. And like, this is like maybe a year and a half, 2 years ago. I'm like, oh, I wonder if they purposely did that in honor of Rogue from the X-Men. You know, that's where my mind went. But I love this reclaiming of the word Rogue, especially in times that are really dark, where you do sort of have to break away from the herd and be the black sheep. And that's what Rogue always signifies to me. But I remember having lunch with an editor once, like years ago, back when I was just like starting off in the city, and having this editor at Cosmopolitan magazine saying, it's always good to be the black sheep. It's always great to go rogue because that means you don't listen to other people. You march to the beat of your own drum. And when I think of you, in the limited time our friendship has existed, I think of someone who's just extremely badass and isn't afraid. So I'm curious, you found Rogue via the word. You saw that universe sending a sign. When did you actually come across the character Rogue in her entirety?
I think I'm so bad with the timing, especially after COVID, like everything's a blur to me.
Oh, I agree.
But I think I want to say 2019 or maybe 2020. I can't really pinpoint it. It might have been like 2019 where I first found her. And then so the story of how I found her is I am a very creative person in my mind, and ever since I was a kid, I would always imagine these scenarios and just kind of be in my own world just to get away from everything else in the world. That's kind of why I also do acting, is so I can try and become somebody else that I'm not. I know you shouldn't do that, but like some days I just want to be a different person, you know? Yeah. So that's why I wanted to go into acting. But I had created this character in my head that I was a huge Marvel fan at the time, still am, but like I've seen the MCU movies and stuff and grew up with Spider-Man. And I created her, and she was a character that could absorb powers from other superheroes and could keep them permanently. That was the only thing, the only difference. And I never gave her a name, but I always imagined her. I always thought about her. And then one day I was just Googling these Marvel superhero female characters. Just I maybe it was because I wanted to dress up as one, or I was just doing my research. I can't remember, but I found these lists of like strongest women female. Funny. Women Marvel characters.
That's a tongue twister right there.
Women female
Female
Marvel. I don't know why I
character.
said women female.
That's okay. That's gonna be the title of this episode.
And I had found Rogue on a few of those lists, and she just caught my attention. And I was reading each one, and I read hers, and she had the power of absorption. And I was like, this is weird. This is familiar. And so then on, I started to research everything about the characters. So when I found her, that gave me the name for my character. Like, that's the name of my character. I basically created a character that I thought I created, but already existed. Like, I'm so talented.
I love how you did
I'm
like the
so
hair flip too.
creative.
You don't stop it. But I think you tapped into something though. And one of the things I pride myself in Power of X-Men is that yes, we love talking about the X-Men. Rogue is awesome, blah blah, but it's a story behind it, right? Why this character resonates with you. And when just again with this conversation, it seems clear to me that you tapped into some kind of universal theme or message in your life. And what is Rogue? How would you characterize Rogue? She's a very sassy Southern belle. What did you do in fourth grade? You were Scarlet in a play that probably wasn't appropriate for fourth
So weird.
graders.
I know.
You did it. It happened to you and
It
it brought you
did.
here.
Yeah, it did. It was me and five other girls playing Scarlett O'Hara, and I happen to have her most famous line in the movie. It was very deserving. So I want to thank the Academy for giving for selecting me for this award. And
I love you
but
so much.
I And I had mentioned it before in the interview with Lenore that there are names that I relate to with Rogue, which is crazy to me. So I figured this out or learned about it last year, I want to say, where her different names in different countries, so in South America, are Vampira and Titania. And I have like a weird obsession with vampires when I was a kid. And I never saw Twilight until I was older, actually during the pandemic, but I'm still obsessed with vampires as a kid. And I've always wanted to be one for some reason.
I mean,
And
same.
honestly, I'm a Scorpio, so it makes sense.
Stop it. Are you Scorpio? I'm a Sagittarius. We're so close.
One of my best friends is Sagittarius, so I get it. I totally get it.
A lot of my family is Scorpio. I tend to gravitate towards Pisces, but I have a lot of people and Scorpio energy in my life that surrounds my tribe. So this is why I'm like looking at you with these like heartfelt gay boy eyes, just being like, you're so fabulous. Everything about you is just fabulous. But anyways, continue, continue.
And Titania was a character that I played in A Midsummer Night's Dream. This was in middle school. And this was actually like, apart from doing theater in high school, my senior year, this was another time I kind of did theater, but it wasn't like on a stage. So in my literature class, we had to read, I was going to say A Winter's Tale, A Midsummer Night's Dream. And we had to take turns reading the characters, and I had Titania. And the way I just performed her, because that sassy attitude, I just resonate with that, right? The way I performed her, the teacher loved, and we had to get up in front of the class too and do it. So I was really put on a performance. And she was like, you know what? You're gonna do it for the rest of the time we're reading this play because I love how you perform. She even like so teachers will send out like these postcards once a month of students that have been doing really well in the class and that they like appreciate. And I got one from her and she was saying how like how I performed so well and she loves me performing as Titania. I'm pretty sure I have that somewhere stowed away under my
Frame
bed.
it. Frame it
Honestly,
for when you are
I
like
should.
getting Tonys and everything. You'll always remember that.
And then I found out that Rogue is called Titania
Yeah.
as well. And then she's been referenced as Scarlett O'Hara in the comics. And actually, it's another one. It starts with the S. It's like Sass. something that I just learned she's called as well. I'm not sure if you know it, but my
Hang
last
on.
name is Sasano.
Yes.
I have the sass in my name.
You got the sass there in your name. I'm trying to pull up because we did post something on her various different
We
names.
did, and that's where I got the fourth name from.
And that's why I'm like, I don't remember what we posted. I'm like, it's so, as you know, like X-Men content and everything. We'll pull it up and we'll drop it for our familia at home so they're aware of it. But yeah, there's so much coincidence there with Rogue and you. It's almost like you guys were predestined to like really come to each other.
I think Destiny probably saw this. You know, she saw this future that we had, and I'm here for it. I love Destiny. I love my mama. But it's funny that you mentioned, like, oh, you're gonna get Tonys, whatever. I don't have a Tony.
I thought you were gonna whip out a Tony there. I was like, girl, you like went through your history. Wait, is it on your manifestation board?
So I don't remember when I made this. I think like middle school. This is a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame that I
Yes.
made.
Oh my
So
God.
I wrote my name in Sharpie on there so bad. And then this is supposed to be a camera, so for an actor.
Yeah.
And I made this in middle school, I think. So even then I knew, I was like, okay, I'm getting a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame at some point in my life. And I actually made my graduation cap in high school. My star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame, but like I had a Cricut machine, so it was much neater than this and it looked much better. And it said, because I'm a theater kid, right? It said, and the world's gonna know your name from
Oh,
Hamilton.
I
So
love that.
yeah, I had to do it because I actually lost this for a while. I didn't know where it was. And I was, before I was graduating, I was like, where is it? I need to find it. I don't know where it is. And then I had the idea, wait, let me turn it into my graduation cap. So if I lost this, at least I have my graduation cap to fall back on. And then I found this in a bin. Crazy.
I mean, I have to tell you, it's not crazy. I think that goes more into the theme of your universe, your relationship with the universe, which is maybe you found a version of yourself. Maybe that's why you found that piece of art and it came back to you.
Yeah.
Oh,
Yeah, I know.
I have chills. This is why I love having conversations and our community here, because I think like X-Men inherently draws in people like yourself who are exceptionally talented, not only what they do, but have a tremendous amount of insight. And I want to say like mutant powers as well, because we love our girl Michelle Waffle Otero, who is our co-host here at Power of X-Men. And she will be the first to tell you that she has tapped into some kind of luck powers. And I have seen that shit happen with Michelle, where I'm like, oh, I don't think this is going to work out, Michelle. And Michelle's like, And it happens. You know what I mean?
That's
And
insane. I know she said it when I was on Finch's podcast
oh,
with
we
her
love Finch
and
so
Dylan.
much. Oh, we love Dylan too.
This was Saturday, and
Yes.
she had, because he asked, there was a question that was, what superpower would you want? And she said she had one and it was luck. And I was like, no way you have the power of luck. Like, that's crazy.
I have seen this, Stefania. I swear I have seen this IRL. And I'm just like, Michelle, like, come on. And again, it's not, and I'm going to say the same thing that I say with you, because I'm always going to have a little bit of a skeptic streak in me. Obviously, there is manifestation. Obviously, there is luck out there. But when I see both of you, I see two hardworking people who are really going above and beyond and doing things that are not only resonating with people, but have been well researched, have been executed properly, that there is talent behind what you're doing.
Thank you. I honestly really, really appreciate that because I love to put research in every character that I play. Every time I did theater or I was cast as somebody, I always tried to do as much research as I could into the character because I wanted to bring out the best performance I could while also giving my own spin on it. But I needed that background of the
Yeah.
character in order to become that character. I'm not a what's it called when you're like, when you like actually like become the character and you just
Is it
are in
method
this act
acting?
method? Yeah, I cannot do method acting at all. I hate that so much. But I still want to try and embody the character as much as I could. And you had mentioned before that you feel like Rogue's a black sheep in in the X family. And I honestly can relate a lot because ever since I was a kid, I always wanted a career in the arts, whether it was dancing, singing, acting. And it wasn't really like too much accepted. It wasn't really accepted in my family. Not accepted, but like as a career, but as a hobby, it was great. But I remember when I was trying to choose my major for college, I wanted to do music. And the school that I went to was known for its music program and producing program. So I was like, I want to go into music. And then my guidance counselor was like, let's put you in as undecided. I'm like, okay, I told you what I wanted, but okay.
My God.
Yeah.
Oh, that boils my blood. Oh,
guidance,
God.
Right? Great guidance.
Yeah. Thanks. Yeah. And by the way, this is a school, so it's not, anyways, sorry, continue.
When I was talking with my family about what I want to major in, because I wasn't sure yet when I graduated college, when I graduated high school, I said how I wanted to do music, and they were like, well, I mean, you should probably pick something that has more of like a definitive career and where you can get like paid. And I was like, I mean, all right. But I mean, deep down, I said music, right? But deep down, I really wanted to perform.
Yeah.
And then when I got into college, I was undecided for the first semester. And so I went through that semester thinking I was going to do architecture. And I took an architectural design class. And I wanted to minor in theater so, so badly. But because that degree is very big and you had to have a lot of credits for that degree, you had to pay more to minor in theater. Usually it'd be included. But because there's extra credits, you had to pay. So I was like, I'm not paying. So I'm going to actually major in communication in film and minor in theater because those two went well together. So I decided why not. And I thought I got to make both sides happy here, my family and myself. So major in communication with a concentration in film production. So that's something. And also something that I really enjoyed too, because I love film. And then minor in theater, and I continued to do theater throughout college. So that was my part. And towards the end of college, I started to lean towards theater more because I just loved it so much more. And yeah. I was always hanging out at the theater, always hanging out with my theater friends. I wasn't part of film club, and I wasn't really close to any people in film class. Not that like I didn't want to be, it's just I connected so much more with my theater friends. But I always felt like that black sheep because I want to travel. I want to explore. I want to go rogue, I want to just like go on adventures and stuff. And it's not the usual talk, the typical talk you'd hear in my family. I come from an Italian family and I'm first generation American. So my family Same. Worked hard to get here, get to where they are now. And so for me to say I want to go into the arts and perform and do
it's
something
that's ludicrous
like,
for them.
Yeah, it's not like a high paying career. It's not that they weren't accepting, because they've learned to accept it actually. And they love what I do now. Yeah. And they as long as I'm happy, they're happy. So they've learned that when seeing me on stage. I'm guessing when they saw me on stage and performing and how happy I was, they could tell like this is something that I actually really want to do and nothing else. So
I am utterly speechless right now because I'm Cuban. I'm a first generation Cuban American. And much like you, my family had expectations for what their children are going to do, because in the case of Cuba, they survived a revolution, came, on a boat, barely made it, had no food. They came to America with the promise of riches, to succeed, not to be a traveling artist. And I have someone in my family who has a natural aptitude for cars, and they love being a mechanic. And my aunt saw them one day as sort of a mechanic and was like paralyzed by it, and then got them a job in Social Security. And all I could think of was that person in my family had a natural aptitude for cars, was really, really good,
Yeah.
and now is going to be at a dead-end job that they don't care for when, fine, you're starting off as a mechanic, but guess what? That mechanic turns into the best mechanic in Miami. That turns into owning, becoming a manager, owning your own store, taking it to new levels. And when I left Miami and I was in New York those first couple of years, what was really evident to me is that the world needs actors. The world needs mechanics. The world needs auctioneers. And there's so many different forms that can take in within the industry, right? When you're saying you want to do musical theater, when you're saying you want to do stage acting, well, guess what? So let's just say the worst case scenario, you don't make it as that. Well, guess what? You can be a production manager. You can
Yeah.
do sound, you can do lighting. There's a plethora of jobs in there that are fulfilling and pay you just as well if you're going to, well, maybe not as well as like a brain surgeon or something like that. I don't want to put that there, but like, gives you enough to have a really good life as long as you're passionate and driven. And
Yeah.
it always sort of struck me the wrong way when I saw a lot of people in my own family, again, having a similar parallel to you, where it's like we're first generation American and there's this unfair expectation set upon us. But I'm so glad that you are a black sheep, and I'm so glad you pushed against that grain. No, I really am. I truly am, because I think the world needs more black sheeps. And I think there
Yes.
needs a lot more people who are saying, this is for me. And if you're bad at it, you're bad at it. If you're great at it, you're great at it. But you need to follow your own heart on that, because the alternative is we're going to be gone in a blip. You know,
Yeah.
you're going to go to bed every night at a dead end job and feel unfulfilled. You wouldn't be here today. You wouldn't be. And here's the thing. I think the universe and the world and the people around us deserve to see our best version of ourselves. And I have to
Exactly.
tell you, I am at the bar at the Roosevelt free gaming, and I see a light come in, and it's you. And it's a light that you're sharing with other people. And you know, I was sort of, it's not that I was going through anything serious, but you know, I had a beat in my head where I was kind of like upset about something. And your light sort of like eviscerated that. And it was so, and you put a genuine smile on my face. And that is because of the who you are today. All and I'm sorry about the what happened with cans. I'm sorry about what happened with the pandemic. But the girl who was Scarlet, to the girl who had that disappointment during the pandemic, to the girl who was on the podcast talking with Lenore, I saw you come in and it brought so much joy to me. And that would not have happened had you not been a black sheep.
I really appreciate that. I honestly do. I have gotten over the years that I was doing this so many reactions like that where it's like, you got me into X-Men again. I watched the show growing up and your videos helped me get into X-Men again or helped me learn about them. And it's crazy that the reactions that people have and the effect that you have on those people, it's something that I wouldn't have expected for starting out doing this. And I love being a black sheep. I'm so stubborn and I'm so determined of what I want. I know what I want. It's just a matter of getting it, right? And it's something that I love being. And I love being spontaneous as well. Like, I don't have things set in stone. I love just going with the flow. But I love that reaction that you have. I love you. You're awesome. And I was so excited to see you sitting at the bar. I saw the back of your head and I was like, I know who that is. Let me go
You're
up to him.
like, I know the back of my head at a bar.
I
Like,
know
if
you
it's a
are.
bar, he'll be there. Well, because you're such a black sheep, and I think you embody so much of Rogue, I have to tell you something that boils my blood. And I try to not get involved in some of these fan discourses like Storm's Mohawk, right? Like that, everyone
Yeah.
has an opinion on Storm's Mohawk all of a sudden.
Honestly.
But one thing that has boiled my blood, and I don't want to speak for anyone else except for myself, but I've spoken with other people within, you know, the production of X-Men 97, has been this reaction. to Rogue being, I don't know the term nerfed. I don't know what the term nerfed means,
I can
but
tell you what it means.
Tell us what it means.
So nerfed is kind of like they downgraded. So basically, they're saying that this Rogue is a downgrade of the animated series version of Rogue.
That is,
That's what it is.
it's even though it's the same voice actress, even though this is a continuation, even though
Yeah.
the anime and we love the animation for what it was 30 years ago, but animation
Yeah.
has evolved. That's just how it is. But there has been this focus, and I feel so incredibly uncomfortable saying this out loud. So I do apologize for anyone who's feeling this cringe on my end, but that people are like, oh, her ass isn't the same. Oh, her breasts don't look the same. And I'm like, huh? And I'm
Yeah.
curious, as sort of the definitive Rogue cosplayer embodying this character, not just because of a physical similarity, but because of an attitude, of a way of life, of a presence. What do you say when you see these kind of comments come in? Have they even hit you as being a Rogue cosplayer? Have people messaged you about that and been weird about it? I'm just curious on sort of your journey with this going on online.
I have gotten comments about when the trailer came out, there were lots of comments about Rogue's butt being nerfed and her breasts and stuff and DMs too. And I'm like, guys, it's first of all, this is a cartoon. Second of all, clearly y'all never seen a woman's body before because a woman's body don't look like that. At least her breasts don't look like that when she's wearing a bra, because you don't have just two bowling balls right on your chest. That does not happen unless you built different, but I don't know. I've never seen a woman built different like that. But that is how, when a woman wears a bodysuit, that is how a woman's breasts look, unfortunately. Sorry to disappoint. And as for her butt, y'all, that was one frame of an
Thank you.
episode. Just one frame. Like, whoever was drawing that at the time was probably down bad. I was like, let me just give this girl some cheeks here. But like, that was just one time. You are not, even throughout the whole show in the 90s, her ass was never like that.
No,
And
it
also,
wasn't.
and also her body does look different. Yes, but that's because an animated series is based off of Jim Lee's version of the characters, and they are all very sculpted and built like machines, and they look amazing. They look phenomenal. But nowadays it's like, well, not everyone looks like that. And yes, Rogue is strong, but you know, she has super strength. So it doesn't mean that she has to look like she's super strong, right? Even though I'm all for like muscles, I love muscles. I love going to the gym and stuff, but
Same.
like, I don't
Oh,
like
I don't love
that.
going to the gym. I love muscles.
Oh,
I don't love
okay.
going. I like pizza.
Like, you can be both, but,
I like
but
muscles when people are working hard for it. Yes.
yes, that's actually one of my goals too this year. But, like, I have actually the figure right here. I have the comic, and I'm just like
Oh.
referencing the look of Rogue on here, and I also have the figure over there, but I'm like looking at her for reference. And I just want to say that when I first saw how Rogue was drawn for this show, I was like, she actually like has a body type that's like mine. It's not like muscular, but it's just like an average like body size. I don't know. I'm not saying like, oh, finally somebody looks like me. Like, no, I'm not saying that. I'm just saying like it's nice to see characters, like especially female characters, that like aren't like super toned and that have like kind of like a body like I do, because I'm not toned at all, even though like I'm trying. But I do love food, so
No, I love food too.
yeah, I mean, and
I'm like, I'm having a pizza tonight. I said pizza out loud. I'm like, I'm ordering
well,
Papa John's the second we're done, getting my garlic
not
sauce.
Pizza
Oh, well, I love Pizza Hut too.
Hut.
Do you know in my neighborhood in New York, We didn't have a Pizza Hut, so we were so used to Papa John's or Domino's or whatever was on the on the block. But we do have a Pizza Hut here, and I do like Pizza Hut quite a bit.
I never had Pizza Hut. My parents wouldn't feed me stuff like that. My parents are European, they would give us like they would make stuff at home for us or whatever. We had like snacks and all, but never like if we want a pizza, my mom will make pizza.
I
She'll
love
just make it
that.
at
Oh
home.
my gosh.
But yeah, not every woman has a big ass. I'm sorry to say that, but not every woman has that. And no female character, especially in the setting of X-Men, should be sexualized like that so much in a cartoon. If that's what you're looking for, that's the wrong platform. You want to be looking for that. And I just love how Rogue looks. I love how
Same.
they all look. They don't have to be like the Jim Lee body type for them to be superheroes or super strong. They could just be regular looking people and it's their character that matters, their personality, their story. It's not really like how they look. But I know I keep looking back at this comic, so I'm looking at her as I'm speaking.
No,
But
she
like
looks great.
I need reference. So like yeah, you see her right here. Like
The main promo image. If you're just listening to the podcast, we're just pulling up the X-Men 97 sort of standard image of Rogue.
So she has just this like slim body and I love it, and she's active, and of course you're not gonna like see it because she's fully clothed, because hello, touch to touch, you can't do that. And she's perfect to me. And look, her boobs, that's a straight line over here.
It's a
There's
straight
no
line.
like there's no W. All right. It's that's how a woman's breasts work, okay, people. If you don't know how they look, well, I'm not saying look them up. Don't look them up.
Look up human figures and how
But
anatomy is supposed to
look up,
work.
like I have so many other figures. I mean, okay, those statues are bad reference. I have a Savage Land Rogue behind me. That's a bad reference. But I'm like looking around me, another figure. Oh, here we go. Okay, here's this other rogue. Her head
Oh,
came
the
off.
bus. Yeah.
Yeah, her head. I haven't glued her back yet.
Oh no, poor
But
Rogue.
like even here, I mean, there's like the outline, but that's like the animation, the comic type look. But like even with the structure of it I don't know why we're talking about breasts here.
It's fine. Welcome to Power of X-Men.
But yeah, you get my drift. I just love how she looks.
Well, let me tell you something. The Jim Lee era of comics was sort of its outlier back in the day in the early 90s, right? They were drawing superheroes in these really cool, very stylized poses. And that was something that had just never been around before. And that really did set the bar for comics in the 90s and where we're at today. However, every art movement, even in comic books, changes. And now we have more of a realistic human anatomy sort of approach. I am forgiving if I see statues that show Cyclops, Rogue, Storm, Jean, whoever, looking very more Greek-like with idealized bodies. That is fine to me. It is also fine to me when there is an interpretation of the characters that they want to be more realistic, which is what X-Men 97 is doing. It is fine. When I see your content, for example, when I'm thinking of X-Men 97 when the trailer dropped, the thing I think about with you is your epic video where you're sitting down and you're seeing Wolverine and Gambit powering up, and you're like, I want to say a thank you to whoever. That to me was like, oh my God, like Stefania just hit the nail with the conversation, right? But the fact that the entire internet got eclipsed by Rogue being nerfed by, oh, whatever your cheeks, I'm almost like, why are you DMing this person who has just given amazing commentary on the trailer to talk about a fictional character cartoon's ass? It makes no sense to me. Like, you can think whatever you can think. You can say you don't like the art form, fine, whatever, move it along. But to say that, like, oh, they nerfed her and soliciting people about it just makes me feel, I don't know, like, I'm just like, where did this kind of conversation come from?
Yeah, it's everything that was really said about X-Men 97 that was all negative. And it's like, did y'all not see the last show? Have you guys like not been reading X-Men, you know, because you say you're a comic fan. Like, yeah, like, y'all don't understand what X-Men's about if you're saying this stuff. So it makes no sense to me. Like, y'all are not real X-Men fans if y'all are saying that. You guys probably grew up on a different type of, I don't know, platform, whatever, something. Because
you're like, I don't know where you guys grew up.
I don't know where y'all grew up or where y'all found the X-Men. This is it. Y'all got the bootleg X-Men? Because this ain't it. This ain't it.
But, you know, the one thing I pride myself with Power of X-Men was because when I was much younger, my cousin and I, we sort of got into X-Men at the same time. And he's married to a wonderful girl, and they have two beautiful kids. And when we were watching the X-Men, he saw Storm conjuring the elements. He saw Wolverine popping his claws. He saw the superhero genre of it. Mm-hmm. And I think that is a beautiful way to look at the X-Men.
Yeah.
However, little Dayspring was looking at what was going on underneath it, this metaphor of being an outcast, this metaphor of otherness, and this idea that there's a school out there that you can go and you're going to meet other people like you and you're going to come together, and your differences, when you come together, are actually your strengths. And that was such a powerful message for me. And I'm not making that up. You're not making it up. We're not pulling something out of the air. It was purposely and deliberately put there by anyone who's been working with the X-Men for, like, let's say the last 40 years since Chris Claremont. So from Chris Claremont to the Lee Waltz to X-Men 97 to even the movies, that theme of otherness and persecution has always been there. I don't know why now all of a sudden, and I just did an Instagram Live with Ralph from No More Mutants, where someone made the comment of, oh, I hope the X-Men aren't woke. And I want to be kind to this person who probably just doesn't understand fully what the X-Men mean to a lot of people. That's fine that you don't see those messages of otherness. However, you cannot deny that those messages aren't there, and that it is, quite frankly, in your face about it. And, you know, we talked to Eric and Julia Leewald from X-Men 92, the original series. And one of the first things they told us, and I love this so much, was that they purposely waited to introduce Magneto in the original series. They waited 3 episodes because they wanted to establish that the main villain of the X-Men were the U.S. government and humans.
Yep.
So by the time you get to Magneto, perhaps Magneto isn't wrong in his approach to fight for mutants. Perhaps Magneto is justified in his cause. And so, like, again, when I get a message during an Instagram Live and someone's like, oh, the X-Men are woke, I hope they don't become woke, I'm like, we, like, been watching the same thing? Have we been reading the same comics? Like, I think there's a disconnect. Again, I'm not saying you need to resonate with that theme. You can love the X-Men for just being superheroes. I applaud you. But some of us have rightfully seen what has been planted there by the writers who have layered this story. And so it really does baffle me that you're taking to Instagram, you're sliding into DMs for a content creator and being like, what happened to Rogue's ass?
And
like,
yeah.
Come on,
and
bro.
This show has a lot more adult themes than the animated series did, which is refreshing to hear and see. Especially in the time and place that we are now as a society. I think that is definitely why people are saying, like, X-Men is so woke and stuff like that. First of all, the people that are saying X-Men is woke don't even know what woke means, okay?
I agree. And by the way, and that was one thing I had to bite myself on my live today, because I want to be like, I think the way you're using woke is A, wrong, and B, more hurled as an insult than an actual conversation political piece. You know, I can respect you if you're going to come at me with the appropriate terms and using them correctly. But the second you start using something out of context, my mind goes, oh, this person's just an idiot. Don't argue.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I've learned to just ignore it and walk away, because I know where I'm headed. I know where my brain is at. I know how I'm going to go throughout my life, but you just do you, sweetie.
Can I interrupt you for just 1 second? Because I want to, with that woke argument, I want to say, you know, in the comic books during the Utopian era, there was a plot point called Proposition X that that was happening when Prop 8 was happening. In the comic books, there is a virus that kills only mutants called the Legacy Virus, which one could just, I don't know, argue that it's a stand-in for the AIDS epidemic that was happening as well, right? So this idea that the X-Men aren't political, I just don't understand that. You may not like it, and that's fine, but to say, oh, the X-Men are like this, like, the X-Men have always been like this. Certainly four decades at this point.
Yeah. I think it's people that have seen the show when they were kids, and they saw it as just a superhero type of people, like no politics, whatever, because they were kids, right? Like when I was a kid, I didn't really think about that. But now as they're older, I feel like they haven't really been in touch with the X-Men for a while, and they haven't seen the animated series again as an adult, or they haven't been keeping up with the comics or something. And they just don't realize that there's actually like a political layer underneath all of these topics that they're talking about in the show.
But I'm going to tell you, there was the opening scene, the opening credits has Jubilee running from a mob of humans who want to murder her based solely on the fact that she is a mutant. And she grabs the fence like this, and her eyes have terror. That is literally in the opening credits. Listen, I'm trying to understand another side of an argument that I'm not really, you know, aligned with, but you cannot deny what is there. I'm sorry.
You can't.
Not sorry.
If you're going to come in and say X-Men is woke, I say go back and watch the 90s show and just sit there as an adult watching this show, and then let me hear your thoughts on it and see if that's still woke. That's just how it is. You gotta just go back to when you were a kid, you saw this, but now you're an adult now, and you gotta watch it again and see where your views are. It's like, and this is kind of weird, not weird, but like weird topic to mention, but like, this is when I was a kid, I was watching all these Nickelodeon shows, and now I'm an adult watching them again. I watched them again like last year, the year before, and this was obviously before the documentary series came out about it. And all these references were very adult references, and I was like, this is kind of weird for a kid's show. Like, I'm understanding this as an adult, but as a kid, I was not. I was just laughing because they were laughing. So yeah, it's that kind of thing where you just have to go back and watch it again as an adult.
Okay, well, on the subject of revisiting X-Men and having X-Men 97, what do you think of the series so far? I want to hear your feels on all of it.
X-Men 97 is everything that I had hoped for it to be, everything that I wanted it to be, and even more. And I think we saw the first three episodes. Third episode came out today as we're filming this. And the episodes just get better and better when you watch. I watched the first and second again when they came out, and then I watched the third one again today, since the premiere. And just watching them again, first of all, I can hear it better because you're not in the theater with a bunch of people screaming.
Sorry about that. I was very loud when I was screaming. When Maddie transformed Sailor Moon style, I screamed at the top of my lungs.
Where were you sitting?
We were in the balcony. We were right there overlooking everything. So we had a beautiful view of all the cosplayers. And me and Luigi were just eating popcorn and watching it. It was gorgeous.
I had gotten a Hot Pocket and my popcorn. I didn't touch my popcorn at all. Had like a few bites of my Hot Pocket because I was so invested in the show. I just couldn't eat, right? But we were actually right in the front, right in front of the DJ, actually.
Oh, gosh.
So that's how close we were. Yeah. But, you know, I got to watch the episodes again, and I love it every time I watch it. Even when, like, I watch kind of like breakdown videos of the shows as well, if there's like any Easter eggs I missed, whatever, because I definitely notice Easter eggs every time I watch it.
Oh yeah, it's littered. Bodemaio did the show right with lots of Easter eggs.
So many. And I actually also listened to your Easter eggs on the podcast as well.
Oh god.
So I've been listening to a lot of your podcasts lately, just so you know, because I drive long for work. I drive like an hour away for work a few times a week, so every time I'm in the car I just pop you on and listen to you.
I'm sorry for your ears, but hopefully like with this episode you'll have it. What I love about Power of X-Men is that there's this wonderful opportunity to bring in this community of very passionate people. So thank you for listening, but it is other people of why people should engage here, because I'm so proud of the voices we have on this podcast.
I have loved everything I've heard so far from this podcast. I love hearing your reactions and your takes on things. I love your reactions to things. It's so amazing.
You're so sweet, but I'm blushing now because like I just think the world of you. So now I'm just like, oh God, what do I say now? You're throwing me off with like.
So back to X-Men 97.
Yes, X-Men 97. Yes, go back to X-Men 97.
Yes.
You're seeing it. You're noticing all these Easter eggs. It gets better and better. And I have to agree with you. And one of the things that about this episode that I love so much is that they took a story from the comics Inferno and that had robbed Maddie of her agency, who had kind of made her like the bad girl who dies at the end and no one really gives her a second thought. They gave Maddie back her agency. And it was so beautiful. And I loved it so much. And in many ways, this episode was an episode about trauma, about coping with trauma, of having horrific things done for you. You're fucking with your memory, but also knowing that you have tomorrow, you have that future. And I thought about that, you know, when you were talking about how everything happened with Can and you just didn't know what your future was. You didn't want to go to bed to dream because you didn't know what was going to happen next. And yet, look at like Madeline Pryor. I know we call you Rogue, but like Madeline Pryor, you persevere in the face of so much obstacles.
Yeah, it was a pretty dark time for me. And I, you know, there were so many thoughts going through my head and not going to get into it, but it was crazy. But like I said, X-Men saved me. The X-Men saved me. Rogue especially saved me because I'm literally staring at all the artwork I have of Rogue. I have 1, 2, 3, 4. I have actually a thing signed by Lenore over there that I won actually in a giveaway. And I'm just looking at her and I'm admiring her. And now when I look in the mirror, I see it.
You're like, now I look in the mirror. You manifested.
I have the jacket here.
Stop, I love it.
Yeah. But it's amazing. I love the X-Men. I think the X-Men are just perfect and the show is perfect. And I cannot wait to see episode 4 next week. And this will be the first one that we haven't seen ahead of time.
Agreed.
So we're going in this blind, okay?
Oh, I'm
blind
so
like
excited.
A bat in daylight, okay? So I
that is so rogue to say.
On the spot I came up with that too. It's just where my brain's at. and I'm just excited for the future of X-Men. If the X-Men can do so well in animation like this, just imagine what it would be like in live action, you know? Like, imagine the team that they would put together for a live action X-Men movie and all these characters. I'm just getting so excited thinking about it. I can't wait.
Okay, final question. Rogue in the MCU, one, if they did a casting call, would you audition? A.
Absolutely.
And B, who would be, if you couldn't play Rogue, who would you want to see play Rogue?
Okay, so answer to your first one, 100% all the way, 110%. I will sell everything, even this house, even though my parents own the house, I will sell this house if I need to do that. And two, if I could have somebody play her that wasn't me, it's hard because I don't really do fan castings. It's never been my thing. I've seen a lot of them thrown around. I've seen Kiki Palmer. I've seen, what's her name? Oh my God. Is this she? I can't say like, it's going to be like anybody, but
are you talking
like
about
brown
the girl
hair,
from,
green eyes.
Yeah, I know. She was in White Lotus.
Yes.
Was she Athena in Percy Jackson? I think that's who I've seen
I
that name thrown around
think
too.
so. I've seen her. Basically anybody with like brown hair, green eyes that I've seen be casted for. I even saw Miley Cyrus recently.
Yes, because
Yeah.
of her Grammy perform. Oh, listen, I want Miley Cyrus for like Dazzler, Lila Cheney.
Oh, I was so thinking that Dua Lipa would make a great Dazzler, especially with her
Oh
music.
my God, especially I saw Argyle and she was phenomenal in it. Yes.
I haven't seen Argyle, but my friend saw it, and actually my friend saw like, what if Dua Lipa was Rogue? I'm like, no, she's more of a Dazzler to me. She wouldn't like, it's
Dazzler.
like she could do an accent, but girl, she British. I mean, not saying she can't do an accent, but like she has a thick British accent. I don't know. And I what was I saying? Oh yeah, the actors. Yeah, those are the ones I've really seen thrown around, really. There's
I s
another character actor with like a brown hair and green eyes. I don't remember her name, but it's like two of them. They both have like brown hair, green eyes. I don't remember the names at all. I think you know who I'm talking about.
I do. I think we're sort of on the same page there, but I too struggle with fan casting. We did an episode recently with Hammy and Varian Ladd where we fan casted, and I had trouble with it just because I trust Marvel to cast who they think should be in that role for that
Yeah.
interpretation of the character. And also, I think once we grow a little bit more into our place in this world, you meet actors, like you. And there's another one, Nathaniel, that I think would be great as Hulkling. And so, who are my fan cast? Well, the actors I know who would be exceptional. You know what I mean? But Stefania, obsessed. I love you. I love it. I was like, okay, I have it out at 7 o'clock. I was telling myself
Oh
mentally, no, it's totally fine. I know we're going on like 2 hours on this because you are such a pleasure to talk to. And I'm so glad. I'm sorry that you had to endure so much with the pandemic and sort of the road that got you here, but you arrived. Everyone in the X Familia and the Power of X-Men Familia messaged me and they're like, oh my God, I love this conversation with Stefania and Lenore, but like we want to really hear Stefania's journey and are you ever going to have her back on again? And thank you for making 2 hours again
Didn't
for
it feel like it? It
you
did
gave
not feel
me
like it.
4 hours of your, because the other one with Lenore was a
Oh,
longer episode too.
yeah.
Thank you for giving me 4 hours. You make me feel like the cool kid at the table.
If you need more hours with me, just you know where to find me.
Well, as the story progresses with Rogue, we're going to have to sit down again with Miss Lenore and
Oof.
interrogate both of you on your feels of Rogue this season.
Oh, God, I can't wait. I can't wait
Where
for a story.
can folks hit you up?
So y'all can find me on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok. So on Instagram and TikTok, no, sorry, on Twitter and TikTok, I am at Stefania Sassano, which is Stefania Sassano. It's a long name, I know. It's pretty Italian. And on Instagram, it is at Stefania underscore Sassano. I ain't gonna spell it out a second time, so y'all could just rewind and listen to that again.
And Familia, we're of course at Power of X-Men on Instagram. We have numerous interviews coming up. We wake up every morning and we're just like, I wonder what we're going to post today. So we do content on the fly, but we do have Lynn Collins, who was Silver Fox in Wolverine Origins, coming up. We have Guy Agostini, and we are scheduling more of the X-Men voice actors as well as some of the actors in the live action. And we'll reveal that information as it comes available.